This is BBC Radio 3. It's 6:30 this Saturday evening, and time now for Opera on 3. Tonight, the UK premiere of a much-admired 21st century American work in a performance recorded at the Barbican in London in February this year. Here's Andrew McGregor to set the scene.
A nun meets a murderer on death row and becomes his spiritual advisor, confidant, confessor, and final companion as he heads for the abyss, accomplishing her own journey of faith under the shadow of the death penalty. Dead Man Walking is the book by Sister Helen Prejean, based on her own experiences, turned into a successful film starring Susan Sarandon and Sean Penn, then brought to the Opera House by American composer Jake Heggie, and such a success that Dead Man Walking has been staged and revived all over the world in the past 18 years. Here at the Barbican, we're about to witness the opera's first UK performance in its 60th local production, with Joyce DiDonato as Sister Helen, reprising a role she's made her own, and Michael Mays as Joseph Desrochers, awaiting execution for murder in Angola's state penitentiary. Mark Wigglesworth conducts the Finchley Children's Music Group, the BBC Singers and BBC Symphony Orchestra, in a production directed by Leonard Folia that's been tried and tested on the stage of the Teatro Real in Madrid earlier this year. And check out the Opera on 3 website for a cast list, synopsis and production pictures. You'd be forgiven for thinking that Dead Man Walking is all about the death penalty in America, and that it puts you on the spot, asking you to take sides. But it becomes increasingly clear as the opera unfolds that it's nowhere near as simple as that, as we watch Joseph on his journey from violent murder to death at the hands of the state. We see his sister Helen travelling between the darkest and brightest aspects of his humanity, and we experience our own reactions to the families of both the murderer and his victims through Terence McNally's brilliant libretto and Jake Heggie's multi-dimensional score. Heggie's here at the Barbican for this evening's performance, and composer, cast and conductor all have some fascinating observations to make on Dead Man Walking, as you'll hear for yourself when I talk to them in the interval between the opera's two acts. Dead Man Walking is based on Sister Helen Prejean's experiences, but the characters in the opera are fictional. We're in Louisiana in the early 1980s, in a clearing in the woods beside a lake at night. It's dark, there's no moonlight, it's hot, with a palpable air of menace. Sounds of insects, music from a car radio, and laughter. A teenage couple has been skinny-dipping in the lake, and as they dry each other, then begin to make love on a blanket on the ground, we're aware that they're being watched from the shadows by two men in their 20s, Joseph Desrochers and his older brother, Anthony. They grab the youngsters. The girl is raped, the boy shot, executed by Anthony. The girl screams, and Joseph, panicked, stabs her to death. Suddenly we're surrounded by children's voices and the sound of clapping. Cut to Hope House, Sister Helen's mission, where she's teaching the children the hymn that becomes her theme during the opera. He will gather us around. After the children have been collected by their parents, Sister Helen shows a letter to Sister Rose. Sister Helen's been corresponding with a prisoner on death row, and he's asked her to be his spiritual advisor as he heads for execution. She's decided to meet him face to face. As Sister Helen drives to Angola State Penitentiary, she muses on how she became a nun and wonders what kind of a man could so brutally murder two children just out of high school. She's pulled over by a highway cop for speeding, but he lets her off as long as she says a prayer for his mother. Outside the state penitentiary, Sister Helen is met by Father Grenville, the prison chaplain, who tells her that Joseph Desrochers is beyond anyone's help. He won't even admit his guilt. The warden walks her past the cells on death row and the catcalls of the inmates to the visiting room, where the guards bring Joseph Desrochers to meet her in manacles. He claims he's innocent and asks Sister Helen to speak on his behalf at the pardon board hearing that's coming up to have his death sentence perhaps commuted to life. But he's worried she'll disappear and he won't see her again. He's counting down. 3 weeks, 4 days, 8 hours, 16 minutes from now, Joseph Desrochers will be history. At the pardon board hearing, Joseph's mother appears, Mrs. Patrick Desrochers. She's brought her two younger children, Joseph's brothers, and pain and poverty are seared into their features. Sister Helen has helped Joseph's mother write her plea, but it provokes an outburst from one of the victim's parents, Owen Hart, who gives a graphic description of the injuries inflicted on his daughter. Outside in the parking lot, waiting for the verdict, Sister Helen meets the parents of the victims and hears for herself their pain and their incomprehension that she's comforting the murderer rather than them. Joseph Desrochers' appeal is denied, And unless the state governor intercedes in his case, he's to be executed. Back in the death row visiting room, Joseph is convinced Sister Helen has abandoned him. But she arrives, late, urging him to admit his guilt so that the truth will set him free. The warden tells her to leave, and sitting alone in the waiting room, dizzy from hunger, voices seem to crowd in on Sister Helen from all sides. The children at her mission, her colleagues, the victim's parents, all telling her not to waste time helping the condemned man, while Joseph and his mother seem to ask her to pray for him. The warden tells her the governor has turned down the final appeal. He gives her change for the vending machine, but she faints before she can get something to eat. So that's the first act of Jake Heggie's opera, Dead Man Walking. Sister Helen is sung by Joyce DiDonato and Joseph Desrochers by Michael Mays. The BBC Symphony Orchestra, led by Stephen Bryant, and the BBC Singers and Finchley Children's Music Group are conducted by Mark Wigglesworth. As the lights go down, and we're left in darkness here at the Barbican, imagine yourself at a lakeside in Louisiana, in the heat of the night, where a carefree teenage couple's lives are about to come to an end in an act of sudden, shocking violence.
Sister Helen. I'm sorry, it was my fault. I wasn't focusing.
Show them again, 2, 3, 4.
He will gather us around, all around.
He will gather us
around. I will be with you.
What are you getting into,
Helen? I don't know.
me up.
I'm sorry. I'm in a hurry to get to Angora.
Lady, nobody's in a hurry to get to Angora. As the sun says, don't despair, you're almost there. Hey, you a nun?
Yes.
I never gave a nun no ticket before. Gave a ticket to an RS agent one time. Got audited that year. Tell you what, I'll let it pass this time. My mama's sick. Cancer. Say a prayer for her.
I will.
And I'll say one for you.
hot. Did I mention it was hot?
No air conditioning, no, our ancestors wore it. Christian martyrs, that's what they were. I put life in a tree. Was a joke, sister.
I got it, father. It's too hot to laugh.
I like a dry sense of humor. Sometimes. Best water, she's all yours.
two religious folk all stuck together.
I shouldn't have said that. Wish I didn't feel it either.
That's all right. I don't like him either. George Benton, Warden, Louisiana State Penitentiary, Angola.
Sisterhood in prison of the Sisters of St. Joseph on the Nile.
Well, that's out of the way. Hey there, how can I be helpful?
By telling me the truth.
Let's go.
terrible place.
Don't stop. Just look straight ahead.
Of grace, the Lord is with our Father who art in heaven, our Father who art in heaven.
Hello. Sister Helen, it was good of you to come. It's a long at
Brown. I wanted to meet you, Joseph. I like the manner of the letters.
Like the monster they all say I am.
You look like someone I pass on the streets.
Tell that to the parting board. I got one more chance with them before they shut me down and inject me with a lethal dose of that poison. Tell them I'm innocent. My brother killed those two kids.
I meant with a cigarette.
He had a better lawyer, got a life sentence. I had a bum lawyer, death row, and a nun. And you don't believe in me either. What is your position, sister?
friend of you. Hell no, why should I be? I'm frightened of what they're gonna do to me. Frightened my legs will hold me up, and they'll have to drag me through the cell block like a piece of meat. I'm frightened of humane, this lethal injection is gonna hurt like fucking hell. I'm frightened of what this is doing to my mama. And that no one's gonna be there for me at the end. I'm frightened of a lot of things, but I sure ain't frightened of you.
We're off to a bad start.
I never talked to no nun before.
And even I never talked to none. I never talked to a convict on death row.
Are you frightened?
Less than I thought.
That's the worst part about this place. You're alone that way too. A warm night, a cold bottle of beer down by the river. Sister, nights like that's what makes the rest of this ugly old planet tolerable.
And one minute, stay, Rosé.
Yes, you ain't coming back.
Would you like me to?
You're all I got. You're all I got.
Then why have you spent these precious few moments trying to push me away?
How do I know that I can trust you? trust you.
We have to trust
each other. How do I know that you?
We have to never for each other.
Will you be my spiritual advisor? Pardon commission meeting. My mama would be so frightened.
She would want to say, mothers do when their children are in danger.
I'm in danger, Sister Helen. 3 weeks, 4 days, 8 hours, 16 minutes from now. And the death machine begins. And Joseph Desrochers, that 5-2-1 is history. I don't want it now.
The defendant's mother, Mrs. Patrick Desrochers. This what I talk into? I feel like I'm on TV or something. Do you all ask me questions or do I just talk? Sister Helen helped me write something. I don't read so good. My eyes. I'm sorry. Pronounce this word, dyslexia. He left school in the 9th grade, went with a bad crowd. There was drugs and some crime involved. I believe there was a woman and a child. None of this excuses the terrible thing my child.
Oh, above the man who stabbed my daughter. She was just 17. We stabbed her over and over and over and over. We stabbed her 37 times in a hole. That was after the paper. They couldn't find her in the pit. It was buried so deep in the guts.
Oh. sister. Your efforts to save Mr. Devoshay have made you a familiar face on the evening news.
Only human compassion can save Joe.
Joe, she calls him.
I'm there to comfort him.
Joe, she calls him.
Comfort him.
She calls him Joe.
Come on, you never sought to comfort us.
I'm sorry. We are all good Catholics. We take the sacraments. Not a crumb from you, not a crumb
sorry,
from you.
I took this with that monster
I'm sorry,
who killed my boy. Where is my comfort?
We are all but casting the sacrament.
Where is my comfort?
I'm sorry, oh. So sorry.
You don't know what it's like to bear a child.
You don't know
what it is.
Oh,
Owen!
Give me hell in prison!
Owen!
Oh, honestly, me!
be that same Lord and Savior, have pity on your misguided soul. We have nothing to talk about, sister.
It is the decision of this pardon board that the appeal of Joseph Desrochers be denied and his execution be carried out.
Helen, it's over. Let's go home. Where is Mrs. Desrochers? Her sons took her home. We've got to get back to home.
Rejection. I don't see it.
Forgiveness.
Forgiveness.
Hearts and souls,
no forgiveness.
Hearts and souls.
I hate it when you sound like a nun.
Forgive that I'm a nun.
could not. You'd make a lousy lawyer, sister. We both know I'm on a rail tractor.
The truth, John.
We both know that no one's gonna forgive me.
I do too, Joe.
The truth will set you free.
Say it again, Joe.
The truth will
say
set
it again.
You
the truth will set you free.
Sister Joseph Desrochers. dead man.
Are you all right, sister?
Gordon! Gordon, can you change a dollar?
It's all me, sister.
Fainting from lack of food, the voices of the families of the victims and the murderer crowding in on her. Sister Helen slumps to the floor of the visiting room at Angola State Penitentiary, where she's been tasked with the spiritual welfare of prisoner 95281, Joseph Desrochers, who refuses to admit to his part in the rape and murder of two teenagers, and as of this moment is a dead man walking. The title of Jake Heggie's opera, with libretto by Terence McNally, based on the book by Sister Helen Prejean. Sister Helen is sung by Joyce DiDonato, Joseph Desrochers by Michael Mays, his mother by Maria Zivchak, and Sister Rose by Misha Brugger-Gosman, with the murder victim's parents, Kitty and Owen Hart, sung by Susan Bullock and Tony Marsol, Jade and Howard Boucher by Susan Bickley and Mark LeBrock. You heard the prison chaplain, Father Grenville, sung by Michael Bracegirdle, the warden, George Benton, by James Cresswell, and the motor cop who arrested Sister Helen for speeding on her way to prison was sung by Matthew Dixon. The Finchley Children's Music Group, students from the Guildhall School of Music and Drama, the BBC Singers and BBC Symphony Orchestra are conducted this evening by Mark Wigglesworth, bringing with him the production of Dead Man Walking that was staged by most of the same cast in Madrid earlier this year, directed, as it is this evening, by Leonard Folia. So now we know, if we hadn't already guessed, that the Dead Man Walking of the title is Joseph Desrochers. All appeals denied, all options exhausted. In the second act of the opera, we'll see how his relationship with Sister Helen develops. We'll find out whether or not she can persuade him to confess his guilt. And we'll hear for ourselves how she navigates the moral minefield that has her bouncing between the demands of her children's mission and the spiritual needs of a prisoner on death row, between the pain and poverty of the condemned man's mother and the outraged sense of injustice of the murder victim's parents. This journey is far from over. We'll pick up the story in the second act, but during the interval we've a chance to find out much more about Dead Man Walking from composer Jake Heggie, flew into London for this performance, conductor Mark Wigglesworth, and some of the cast, beginning with Joyce DiDonato.
I was talking with some of the orchestra after our rehearsal yesterday, and many of them were in tears, staying in their seats at the end of rehearsal and trying to process what they had just experienced. I tried to explain to them, I think one of the reasons this piece has so much power is we're singing words that have actually been spoken between people in really heightened states of their life or just before their death. And there's a real power knowing that these words have been communicated between people that were hurting and suffering and searching and trying to establish real connection at really urgent times in their life. But in terms of my portraying this on the stage, it's very important that I just make it my own, like I have with Rosina or Semiramide. The huge difference of this role compared to many of the others that I say is this is a receptive role. In a way, it's passive almost because I'm the guide to the audience. The audience is going to experience this journey through my experience on the stage. People are telling me how much they're suffering. They're looking to me for answers. It's not, for example, a role like Semiramide where I come in and dominate the stage with action. So it's much more about listening and processing all this emotion that's coming her way.
I was wondering if your experience and perhaps the portrayal of the role has been affected by the work you've done with inmates of Sing Sing in New York, the prison there.
It's kind of profoundly, I think, changed the way I do this because it's very easy to have an idea of what prisoners are when you've never encountered them. And then you sit face to face. And in my case, I've sung with prisoners. I sing music that they've composed. And somehow, whether they're good or evil, starts to dissipate a little bit. Never taking away the acts that they have done, never taking away their guilt or innocence. But this is what Sister Helen talks about as well in her encounters with these people that she's met, is the thing that pulls her in is the humanity in their eyes.
And so the journey continues in the second act, and the relationship with Joseph has changed. We've seen it and feel it change towards the end of the first act as well. We know he's a dead man walking at this stage. We've just found out. How does their relationship change over the course of the second act?
Well, the intensity is ramped up because her mission, especially as a spiritual advisor, as a Catholic spiritual advisor, is his salvation. And they've grown to love each other, I think, in a very profound way. And she wants to help him in this last walk. She's also struggling with the grief and the fear of watching this friend that she's grown to love be put to death in a horrible, sanitized, clinical way. But the most urgent thing is to get him to say he's sorry, to get him to take responsibility. And she's pushing him as much as she can under the circumstances while still trying to offer comfort. But finally, in the confession scene, just before the finale in the second act, he breaks down, finally opens to her, and to admit and take responsibility for what we've already seen him do at the start of the opera. Dead Man Walking comes under the guise of being an opera about the death penalty, but the longer I've spent with this story, I actually think it's a love story. It's a story that causes us as an audience member, as a participant in this journey, to look inside and say, how capable am I of forgiveness? And this is the walk that real Sister Helen Prejean is walking all the time.
I do too, Joe.
Michael Mays, Joseph Desroches, he's been corresponding with Sister Helen, and yet when they first meet, he's quite confrontational. How does the journey continue for him? What is he looking for?
He's sort of been thrust into the world in ways that I don't think he's had a lot of control over. He's a disenfranchised guy. You know, throughout the entire show, what you actually see through his journey is these little cracks, these little openings in this shell that he's protected himself with. And, you know, what's actually revealed underneath is this little boy who's been unable to trust anybody because he's never felt safe and never felt taken care of. And even in Act Two, when he goes and tries to get his mother to forgive him for not only for the things that he's done, but for the shame that he's brought to the family, in order for him to get that forgiveness from his mother, she has to admit all the terrible things that he's done, which he refuses to admit. And you realize that his mom is not equipped to handle the truth. That lays the groundwork for Sister Helen to step in and be for him what he needed from his mother. And she shows him what grace is and what real love and truth and all those things are. It's such a powerful story. It's not about the death penalty. The death penalty is the MacGuffin. It's the thing that keeps that time clicking towards the end. Time becomes a character. Tick, 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 tick. It's this pressure.
Jake Heggie, Dead Man Walking was a book and a film. Why pick this one?
Well, I think it picked me, actually. I was sitting having lunch with Terrence McNally, who we were considering working together for this big project for the San Francisco Opera, and he had a list of 10 ideas, but he said, there's only one I really want to do, but I'm not going to tell you which one because we need to want to do the same one. He said Dead Man Walking, and literally my hair stood on end. I just felt this shiver of music and recognition that this was just a brilliant, bold idea, that it felt big enough emotionally to fill an opera house, that it felt contemporary and timeless, very American and yet universal. It dealt with classic themes in opera and in life, you know, and things that work well on the opera stage. It lent itself to all different kinds of ensembles and solos and choruses. The whole thing was playing in my head the minute he said it. It just felt like the right idea.
And your first opera, so how long did it take you to find the vernacular that you needed to tell this story?
I think I was born to write the opera because it demanded everything that is sort of innate to my compositional style and language. And Terrence McNally was aware of that. His libretto demands certain kinds of music throughout. It starts off with a scene in nature that has much beauty and much menace too. Two young teenagers running on stage, a rock and roll song, then a radio station changes, and then it's a different kind of song, and then it's a gospel hymn being sung by Sister Helen, which becomes a lively gospel tune sung by the kids, and it demanded jazz and rock and pop and all of these things that I grew up with. And he has a great affection for opera, as do I, but we both started, I think, with musical theater. My first opera, it has the word dead in the title, which they always tell you avoid.
Don't do that.
And it's also big. It requires big forces and big singing and massive cast and chorus and orchestra. And I thought, well, it'll never get done because it's a new American opera dealing with this very difficult situation. And yet it's here at the Barbican. This is the 60th international production, which is remarkable. So I never could have imagined that.
Are there any influences you're prepared to admit to?
Bernstein, Sondheim, Gershwin, Britten, Debussy, Poulenc, Ravel, as well as, you know, going back to classic models like Mozart, Verdi, and Puccini. Those were all very important composers to me growing up.
Now, as we go into the second act, we know at the end of Act One that Joseph Desrochers is a dead man walking. He's not going to be pardoned. You have to keep us on that journey to its inevitable conclusion through Act Two. How do you pace it? How did you actually go about that?
Everyone in the piece is in some sort of crisis of identity and spiritual sense. And to me, that's the core issue. So that's what I was pacing more than anything. Sister Helen asked me one thing when I spoke to her on the phone. She said, Jake, I know you're going to have to change things. You have to invent character, move things around, change subjects. She goes, the only thing that I ask is that it remain a story of redemption. And so from the very beginning, that's where we're going on this journey to that moment of redemption.
Well, Mark Wigglesworth, this is Jake Heggie's first opera. It's, I think he said this is the 60th production of it, but it is the UK premiere. So how would you introduce the musical language that we're hearing in the opera this evening to someone who isn't familiar with his music?
The message is not, is capital punishment right or wrong? The message is, how do we as people forgive each other, and should we, and when should we, and when should we not? The music, for me, expresses the sincerity of everybody's text. I love the libretto. I think the libretto is fantastically structured and so clear what everybody feels. And I think Jake's music just supports that in every line, exactly as you want the text to be supported. And like Janáček and like Britten as well, Jake has set the text exactly as it should be delivered. If you read this text without the music, it would take the same length of time. And he gives the singers the rhythms like a director gives an actor the pulse of how to do the line. For me, it's extraordinary how well he has directed the actors.
It's interesting thinking about the feel of it from a sort of textural point of view, the score, because we're somewhere between grand opera, contemporary opera, and music theatre, aren't we?
It's lovely not to have to make those distinctions. And it shows that, you know, those distinctions are imposed, actually. If something feels operatic, what does it mean for something to feel operatic? For me, it's the sung word in a dramatic context. Whether that's musical theatre or opera, I wouldn't like to delineate it like that.
There is something formal about it structurally. It feels very free, and yet we do have these set-piece arias. We have the big solo numbers, we have the duets, we have the ensembles, and some really quite striking and powerful ensembles as well. So to that extent, there is that sort of operatic tradition about it, isn't
Absolutely.
It?
I think the structure is also one of its greatest strengths. He knows exactly when we need something intimate, when we need something confrontational, when we need something grand. And he holds the tension, our tension, fantastically through the whole evening. I mean, it's about love and death, which is every opera is about love and death, and this is no different.
Also, the ways in which he touches different musical traditions from time to time. We have there's a rather fantastic sort of Elvis section.
I've never conducted a note of Elvis Presley before.
Well, exactly, I was just going to ask. He throws you all sorts of curveballs, doesn't he? Because there's the music theatre, there's bits of jazz, there's syncopated stuff, there's a little bit of rock and roll. I mean, you have to cover all sorts of bases here.
Which is thrilling for the orchestra. I think they've loved the variety of that, but it never feels imposed. As I say, it always comes out of the text. The variety of musical genres feels very organically connected.
How does Heggie, from a musical point of view, handle the execution scene?
Well, he doesn't, in the sense that there is no music for the execution scene. It's rather like the end of Peter Grimes. It's also kind of devolves into speech at the climax of the opera. It's like no music can do justice to such an extraordinary act. But in the lead up to the execution, he uses exactly the same music that led up to the murders. And so although it's very clear that the piece doesn't overtly take sides, if you've got to use the same music for both murders, it's very clear what you feel about it.
Conductor Mark Wigglesworth talking to me about some of the secrets of Jake Heggie's score. You're listening to BBC Radio 3's Opera on Three. I'm Andrew McGregor at the Barbican in London for the UK premiere of American composer Jake Heggie's first opera, Dead Man Walking, in this semi-stage production directed by Leonard Folyer, with the Finchley Children's Music Group, the BBC Singers and BBC Symphony Orchestra, conducted by Mark Wigglesworth. And remember to look for a cast list, synopsis and production photos on the Opera on Three website. Well, we've heard Joyce DiDonato, who sings Sister Helen, saying that she thinks of it as a love story, not a moral treatise on the death penalty in the USA. And Michael Mays, as condemned murderer Joseph Desrochers, telling me that the death penalty is merely the MacGuffin that drives the opera. But in the second act, it's unavoidable. We're heading inexorably towards an execution on stage. The rock and roll song we heard by the lakeside right at the start returns in the prelude to the second act. We're in Joseph's cell on death row. He's listening to the radio as he does push-ups in his vest and pants. The warden interrupts to tell Joseph the date and time of his execution, August the 4th at midnight. As he muses on his fate, then tries to sleep, on the other side of the stage we see Sister Helen in bed at her Hope House mission, tossing and turning, waking from a bad dream. She thinks she's seen the murder victims in the room with her, and Sister Rose begs her to stop seeing Joseph. Sister Helen, though, knows her faith is being tested, so she has to carry on. It's August the 4th, the condemned man's last day, Sister Helen's final visit. In Joseph's cell, they bond over memories of Elvis Presley, with the help of the orchestra. He admits he's scared, but he's still not confessing. A guard announces that Joseph's family is here, the beginning of the end, he says. In the visiting room, Joseph's younger brothers are in their Sunday best. He tries to say sorry to his mother, on the verge of confessing, but she stops him. She believes in her son's innocence and needs to keep believing. She asks Sister Helen to take a last family photo. Joseph's mother holds it together until the guards drag her son away, then breaks down and is comforted by Sister Helen. When the Desrochers have gone, Sister Helen, alone, asks who will walk with her. Her journey is terrible too. Only Joseph will be with her to the end. Outside the death house, where preparations are being made for the execution, Sister Helen comes face to face once again with the murdered children's parents. She can't bring them the confession of guilt they crave, but this time Owen Hart hangs back and tells her that now he's not so sure what he thinks. Nothing's going to bring back his little girl, but nothing brings him peace either. He and his wife have separated due to the stress, and while he doesn't know that he and Sister Helen can be friends, maybe they can part as fellow victims of Joseph Desrochers. He asks her to visit him. Back in the cells, Joseph is being prepared to go to his death. Sister Helen tells him she's been to the place by the lake where the teenagers were murdered and begs Joseph to tell her what happened that night. She can only see it through his eyes. Something cracks. Suddenly, he starts talking, telling her how it happened, confessing to his part in the rape and murder. "Don't you hate me now?" he asks her. "No," she replies, and tells him to look at her as he's put to death. She wants the last thing he sees in this world to be a face of love. Father Grenville, the prison chaplain, arrives to lead the last prayers as Joseph is marched to the death chamber. Sister Helen is taken to sit with the families of the murdered children as Joseph is strapped to the gurney, upright, arms outstretched as though on a cross, and prepared for the lethal injection. The warden asks whether he has any last words, and Joseph addresses the parents, asking them to forgive him for taking the lives of their children. Joseph tells Sister Helen he loves her, and he looks into her eyes as we hear the machinery delivering the chemicals and Joseph's pulse coming to an end. Joyce DiDonato sings the part of Sister Helen, Michael Mays is Joseph Desrochers, and Mark Wigglesworth conducts the combined forces of the Finchley Children's Music Group, the BBC Singers and the BBC Symphony Orchestra. Act two of Jake Heggie's opera Dead Man Walking begins in the condemned man's cell on death row, with Joseph doing push-ups as the warden arrives to tell him when he's to be put to death.
August 4th, midnight.
48, 49.
Hear me. August 4th, midnight.
50, 51, 52, 53.
Suit yourself.
55. Hear me. 56. I hear you loud and clear. 57. Help! I think everyone heard ya. Everybody hear that? August 4th. Oh, Joseph's gonna die for his sins. Justice is served, revenge is had. Everybody's happy. August 4th, my little brother's birthday. Well, happy birthday, little brother. Here's your present. A dead big brother. August 4th, come midnight. Be precise, down to a science. The second end sweeps up to midnight. And correct buzzword, Joseph Desrochers is a dead man.
Dead man walking.
Dead
stand, the dead man is me. August 4, come midnight. Why did you do that? Want people, scare them. Sure, that's what you wanted. Scare me good. Give me the same. Yeah, I didn't want it. I'd kill those two kids. Yeah, long as I don't say it. Ain't got their own conscience to worry about. I hear you loud and clear. That's what she wants to say. I did it so she can feel good about herself. Good about her God. The truth will set you free. Free. Wake up, Sister Ellen. Rise and shine. God lets bad things happen, and they happen all the time. Me, a bad thing if ever there was. And why? Because God lets bad things happen, sister. Oh, he does. Sorry to let you down, sister, but maybe it's good to let me down. I'm going to hell. Stop me, sister. And so August 4, come midnight, Joseph goes to hell. Why are you coming back, sister? What do you want? Nobody's gonna hear me say it. Says, do what you gotta do. But if y'all think killing's so bad, look at what you're doing. The girl, I remember the girl. Pretty, big eyes. Why'd you have to scream? I wouldn't hurt you if you hadn't screamed. The boy, don't remember the boy. Funny, I never think about the boy.
Thank you. Oh, Sorry that those kids are dead. Sorry, and you'll never know. But I ain't confessing to something that I didn't do.
I'm trying to help you, Joseph. But you've got to let me in, and you've got to tell.
Have you let me in, Sister Helen?
I don't know.
none of that sentimental crap. Okay.
Okay.
Just be there for me.
I'm here.
Hey, Rocher. Your family's here.
My mama.
They're waiting.
I guess this is it then. The beginning of the end.
Mustangs are so cool.
Ouch!
He ain't here yet.
Hey, Mama.
Hey, Joey. How are you?
Good. Real good.
You put on some weight, son.
Yeah, sitting around all day.
Hey, Joe. Hey.
Your boy's been helping your mama.
They've been real good, Joey. Real good. They painted the porch and fixed up the screen door.
Betty Sue's gonna marry me.
And I'm gonna be the best man.
I'm real proud of you both. You're the man of the family now.
We know, Joe.
We're all gonna miss you. I mean...
You all know, Sister Helen. So sorry, I brought such shame to you.
You said we weren't gonna do that, Joe.
I'm so sorry.
Maybe I'll join.
As long as I know you didn't do all those terrible things,
oh, Mama,
there's nothing to be sorry for.
I let you down.
Forgive.
Please.
You told me yourself. You
up, folks. Sorry, ma'am.
I understand.
They gotta get me ready. They gotta take me to
good. That's good.
Do you have a confession of guilt for us? Do you have an apology?
I'm afraid not. You've been on his side from the start.
You've never really tried to understand.
You've never called a tale to help us.
Oh, my little girl.
You've been on his side from
sister. It's him or us.
It's right or wrong, sister.
This way, folks. Some harsh thoughts. Now I'm not so sure if anything will ever bring me peace. Nothing's gonna bring back my dear girl.
Thank you.
much longer? How much more time?
Do you really want to know?
Yes. No. I'm so ashamed. I'm a scrawny little SOB, ain't I?
Joseph, there isn't much time. Please tell me. Tell me what happened that night.
I told you. I already told everyone and you 100 times. My brother killed her. I was just there. Stoned and wrecked. But I didn't do it. That's all there is to tell.
Truth will set you free, Joe.
I told the truth, and all it's got me is a one-way ticket to the death house.
I went there, Joseph.
Went where?
I've been to the spot, the first time in daylight, but the next time at night.
You went there. Been drinking and smoking weed at the roadhouse. There was a woman egging me on and acting like she wanted me like I wanted her like. She gave me something, something that made me crazier than the bulls and the grass. When I asked her to go to the lake with me, she laughed. Oh, I was crazy and ready to explode. That's how mad I was now. My brother said that the kids from the high school went out to the lake just to make out. Maybe, maybe we could find someone, someone out there too. I can't. And when you're looking at me like that,
go on. I'm right here with you. Take me to the truth, Joe.
There was one car we could hear laughing. A girl and a boy, they were swimming, and we watched and waited. Girl was pretty, and I wanted her. What a bad. But she wouldn't stop screaming.
killed her. Sister, I killed her with my own two hands.
Did a terrible thing, Joe. You did a terrible thing, Joe. But you are still a
such a bad thing, sister.
Joseph!
Maybe my dying will give them folks some relief.
Joe!
Sister Helen!
When they do this thing to you,
Sister Helen!
I want you to look at
sister,
me!
Sister, I'm gonna die! goodbye, Sister Helen. Thank you. I love you too. Yes, sir, I do. I want to ask the parents forgiveness for what I did. I did a terrible thing, taking your children from you. And I would just like to say that I hope you get some relief from my death.
Proceed.
I love you.
Thank you.
He Will Gather Us Around, Sister Helen's hymn, sung solo one last time by Joyce DiDonato as she gazes into the face of the murderer she befriended on death row, Joseph Desrochers, sung by Michael Mays after his state-sanctioned execution. And here at the Barbican in London, we've just heard the UK premiere of Dead Man Walking, written by American composer Jake Heggie, to Terence McNally's libretto from the book by Sister Helen Prejean. Mark Wigglesworth conducted the Finchley Children's Music Group, students from the Guildhall School of Music and Drama, the BBC Singers and BBC Symphony Orchestra, led by Stephen Bryant, in a production directed by Leonard Folia. And more or less the complete cast is already lined up on stage at the end of the opera. The first thing that happened was that Joyce DiDonato embraced Michael Mays. We've had applause for the children from Sister Helen's Hope House Mission, for the BBC Singers as prison inmates, from the opening murder scene, Anthony Pantani as Joseph's older brother Anthony Desrochers, and Diana Samper and Manuel Palazzo as their teenage victims, Olivia Sjoberg and Jessica Austin as parents at Hope House, Henry Tickenden and Alexander Jones as the singing prison guards, Catherine Mukindo and Laura Biankowska were fellow nuns, Sister Catherine and Sister Lillian. Joseph's younger brothers were sung by Louis Hurley, Matthew Healy, and Matthew Dixon was the motor cop who pulled over Sister Helen on her way to prison. And that huge roar was for Maria Zilchak as Mrs. Patrick Desbouchers, Joseph's mother, convinced of her child's innocence right to the end. And that cheer for Michael Mays as Joseph Desrochers, who found human love for the first time at the end of his journey. And we've got people standing all around the barbecue here this evening. And that cheer is for Joyce DiDonato, a Sister Helen Prejean, still on her journey of faith and forgiveness. We had from the State Penitentiary, the chaplain, Father Grenville, sung by Michael Bracegirdle, Warden George Benton by James Cresswell, and of course the parents of the murder victims, Jade and Howard Boucher, sung by Susan Bickley and Mark LeBrock, Kitty and Owen Hart, sung by Susan Bullock and Tony Marsol, and Misha Brugger-Gosman as Sister Rose, Sister Helen's companion at Hope House. Joyce DiDonato dragging on director Leonard Folia and gesturing his appreciation to Mark Wigglesworth and the BBC Singers and BBC Symphony Orchestra, all of them now standing with the whole cast applauding them. Well, composer Jake Heggie's here at the Barbican for this evening's UK premiere of his first opera. It's only taken, what, 18 years to reach us since it opened in San Francisco back in 2000. And here comes Jake Heggie embracing Joyce DiDonato and Michael Mays, taking centre stage with them. For him, he says it's not a preachy, polemical opera. It doesn't tell you how you should feel. He wanted to bring people into dialogue, to give everyone in the story a voice. And for the real Sister Helen Prejean, art helps us explore alternatives, she writes. It allows us to make new choices and brings us to a deeper place where all this reflection can happen. To reach out to people, you have to tell stories, she says. And it's part of Sister Helen's own story we've just heard here this evening. She's still campaigning tirelessly against the death penalty, and her story continues.
That was Andrew McGregor at the Barbican in London introducing the UK premiere of Jake Heggie's opera Dead Man Walking. On Opera on Three's programme page, you'll find the synopsis, a photo gallery from that performance, and a link to an interview with Sister Helen Prejean. Next Saturday, our Opera on Three is the premiere of George Benjamin's keenly anticipated new work, Lessons in Love and Violence, recorded earlier this month at the Royal Opera in Covent Garden, with the composer himself conducting. That's at 6:30 next Saturday evening. In the meantime, our Thursday matinee brings you not one, not two, but three operas. Puccini is the composer, and the works are Il Tabarro, Suor Angelica and Gianni Schicchi, otherwise known as Il Trittico. That's a recording from Bavarian State Opera in Munich. You can hear it on Thursday afternoon at 2:00.
Nigel Kennedy. Milosz. Eliza Carthy and the Wayward Band. The great Seymour and more. some of the finest classical, jazz, folk and world musicians. All from the Radio 3 stage at BBC Music's Biggest Weekend. Coverage continues on Monday afternoon at 5.